This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you the day after Brentford managed to chisel yet another point to safety, some people would say. The fear of relegation is still there with some people, which is fair enough, as they say. But so getting 1 point to Brighton, some people are happy with that. Some people thought maybe we should be trying to get more. We'll talk about that on this podcast. I'm sitting here in the virtual joint, probably 5,000 or so miles away from my colleague here, Lainey, who's in the house. Lainey, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very good. Yeah. Got back from a nutritional draw last night. As you say, yeah, chiseled a point away from what was a very good team, Brighton. Yeah, plenty to talk about. And as we said earlier in the week, they're coming thick and fast. We've just got two games out of the way, it seems, and then we've got Villa on the horizon day after tomorrow. So, quick turnaround, and the boys go again up in Birmingham.
That's right. All right. On Saturday, we're playing Aston Villa, but let's just hark our back to this midweek. Actually, it was obviously, like I said, we got a point against Man United, which people are a little bit gutted about. Thought maybe we should have got 3 points against them, which is not an unfair thing to have asked for, considering the fact that we absolutely batter them off the park. And if you think about it as well, if we'd got the 3 points against Man United and the point against Brighton here, we'd have been looking in a much better situation, sort of kind of pushing ourselves up, maybe, I don't know, maybe at least a place in the table, and heading towards that kind of real mid-table zone. But this Brighton match, you know, on the other hand, you know, there's certain other things that could have gone very horribly wrong for Brentford. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. There's some games that, you know, back in the day, we might have lost these games, but, you know, maybe there's a bit more of practicality about Brentford, which is just allowing us to kind of, and like I said, I'll talk about that later, which is allowing us to go into these games and say, look, let's just get whatever result we feel, the minimum result we feel we need to get out of this game, and then let's just move on. If we get that, that's good. If we get anything better than that, that's fine. But not only that, because that game is also affected by other games that are happening, and this is one of the sort of big midweek Premier League weeks, actually, where there's actually midweek games, because normally in the Premier League there aren't midweek games unless you maybe got an FA Cup replay or if you're in Europe, but in general all the games come on a Saturday or a Sunday, or if you play Monday night football it's then. So it's actually quite strange to have like a big glut of games in midweek. I think the other glut of games that come in midweek is just after Christmas as well, and I think there's probably maybe one a little bit earlier in December, but other than that you're not used to it. So sort of having the game on Saturday or Sunday and then having a couple of days off, and then having a Tuesday, Wednesday and a Thursday where games are being played which may affect your position is rather strange. And there were a few games that sort of affected us, weren't there, Lainey?
Yeah, all at the bottom of the division. But yeah, you know, the games on Tuesday, they didn't go badly against us, but, you know, not in the Forest. They got a rare win. They were 3-0 up against Fulham at half-time. Fulham, to their credit, they battered Forest in the second half, and you know, they probably deserved to get something out of the game, really. Yeah. You know, Everton got a point up at Newcastle, which, you know, again, you know, it's to be fair, Everton stuck in there. They got a, you know, bit of a fortunate penalty. It's then we're looking at Sheffield United are away at Liverpool tonight. Burnley, they got another point, didn't they? And then it's Luton lost at Arsenal, so it's a difficult, you know, difficult one for us to kind of well, I would say not difficult, but it kind of muddies the water a bit. It kind of changes what you expect. I mean, obviously we expect us to win, but we're, in my head, it's like we need to do enough to just escape. You know, we're not going to win every single game. I think last night kind of was a bit of a reality check. I think the game against Man United kind of lulled us into we're back to full strength, and we've got a wealth of options now that Brian and Bumo's back, and Reguilon was going to be in contention for the start yesterday, and you know we're hearing that one or two others are on the horizon. It showed last night how kind of fragile we kind of still are, and two games in a few days was kind of a big ask for some of the young players. You know, Yarmolek looked a little bit out of sorts. He looked like he was confused about what was expected of him. He actually looked like, you know, he looked like he was blowing, actually, but whether that was the case or not, I'm not sure. But he made it to the second half. And there was, like, you know, one or two others that didn't really have the same impact as they did on Saturday night. But a very different opposition. Brighton are clearly better than Man United, Bill, from what you saw. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to come and talk to about the Brighton game in a little bit when we'll talk about that in much more depth. But what I'm going to come back to, because you were talking about Luton losing to Arsenal, which is, I think, was actually the key result. As you know, I keep on saying, and I keep on going on about, is that, you know, my fear of Brentford going down is 0.01%. You know what I'm saying? Or probably even less than that. And my thing is that, you know, we just basically just need to chisel points to just keep ourselves with our head above water. The main team to look at is going to be Luton. Luton may win a game here or there, but at the end of the day, unless they do remarkably well, I can't see them going on a run, which is going to affect us. And we've got a big enough points gap between us and them at the moment now. Yes, we do have to play them, but like I said to you, they're going to have to win a fair few games in a row for us to be in a pickle. And if they win a fair few games in a row, that means all the other teams around them also have to, like Nottingham Forest and, to a certain extent, Everton too. But like I said to you, they lost to Arsenal, which was expected of them. And we're going to Luton in a few weeks' time. And the tickets went on sale for Luton. And I think they went on sale just as we did our last podcast. And I sort of mentioned the fact that, oh, it looks like the Luton tickets have gone on, sort of sold out after a couple of hours. And I was a little bit confused because I wasn't able to get sort of regular tickets. I ended up getting sort of kind of restricted view tickets, and there were sort of family tickets that were there. Then they sort of disappeared within a couple of minutes. But as soon as we came off air, we found out that there was all sorts of malarkey had gone down, and there was a lot of unhappiness about the Luton sale. And it looks like there might have been a little bit of a misjudgment and a little bit of a fluff in the fact that number of people, season ticket holders who should have got tickets, who had enough taps, people with 6,000 and 7,000 taps, they weren't able to get tickets because the amount of tickets that were put on sale, they set a level which basically didn't guarantee that everybody within that level could get tickets if they applied for it. So by the time people had come out of their work meetings at 2 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever time it was, the tickets had gone. I mean, I was lucky because the tickets went on sale for me. I'm actually in Florida at the moment now, and the tickets went on sale at, was it 2 o'clock in the afternoon? So by the time I'd got up at sort of 8 o'clock in the morning, I mean, I sort of popped on at 8:45, right? Because I just got up, I thought, let me just get my laptop on, buy the tickets, and I'll go about my business. So I was kind of lucky it was the beginning of my day. But if it was the middle of the day or the middle of the night, I might not have actually been able to buy them tickets till the following day, and they would have sold out, and I'd have been properly screwing if that were the case. So I can imagine the people out there who must be properly screwing because they didn't have the time, because they have to work, the window to try and buy those tickets, and they're sold out by the time they bought them. It's a bit of a fluff, and kind of probably reminds us of like the days of the Southampton Cup game and games like that, where they kind of put the tickets on sale and not realising that they're going to just kind of just get snapped up, isn't it, Laney?
Yeah, it's just a real, as you said, it's a proper pain in the arse for some of the biggest, you know, perhaps most loyalist fans who have missed out. And it's you know, some of our crew, you know, as you said, you know, if your available window to get online didn't coincide with you know the availability, then there's a good chance you missed out. So, you know, it's the must-have ticket, really, isn't it? You know, in terms of rarity, scarcity, game itself was never going to be one of the standout ones for the whole season. But, you know, it's an important one. We want to go there and we want to get behind our team. And, you know, it's galling if you just missed out because of circumstances. So, yeah, lessons really have to be learned from this. I just think they set the bar too low. And all the time... You know, it's just combination of a couple of factors, and it means, you know, people that would have got a ticket have missed out.
Yeah, so, you know, there's going to be, you know, there's an investigation going on. I know Bias are involved in the investigation where they've asked the club exactly what's gone on. However, you know, and I'm not saying it in a laughing way, but I'm laughing saying they can have as many investigations as they want, but they're not going to be able to get any more seats at Luton, or unless they can miraculously find tickets. But I know in the Luton end, that's going to be, one of my friends, the charity Rob, his son plays for Luton, and he normally gets tickets for Luton games, but he said that the Brentford game is one that he very much doubts he's going to get a ticket for, because it's going to be one of those real high... highly wanted for ticket. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So he's going to be struggling to that. So Luton's going to be selling out. We've obviously sold out our end. You know, they can't build any more seats. You know, maybe people might have to try and see if they can sort of put places in the houses behind the ground.
From what I'm hearing, you know, what has exacerbated the situation as well is that, you know, the staff allocation of tickets for the Luton games, like as high as 200. 200 tickets. So out of an allocation of 1,000, you've only got 800 tickets. Well, you know, whether that's Chinese whispers or not, I'm not so sure. But, you know, it seems a very high
proportion. Well, that's including the players, of course, though.
Yeah, players and their families and all sorts. You know, that allocation. But it seems, you know, 200 seems a hell of a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so watch the space to see, you know, maybe there might be some more free tickets, tickets freed up at Luton. We shall see, but like I said to you, it's a really frustrating one for the fans. You know, it's a 3 o'clock kickoff as well, so legally, you know, the fans can't even watch the game. Whether or not they, you know, the club might decide to do a beam back to the club, that's a bit of an interesting question. I mean, I know you used to do it back in the Championship. We were allowed to do that back there. I don't know whether or not they're allowed to do that here for matches, but maybe that's something that they should be considering that there's a number of fans that would have missed out on that one. What do you think?
Well, yeah, whether fans will want to come together in mass to do that, you know, there's a million other ways to watch it, Bill. Other options are available, as they say.
Yeah, they are available. Not saying that everybody goes for those other options as well, Laney, but like I said to you, it just may be an option for people to watch a game, having a bit of a drink and watching the game and enjoying the game, hopefully. But anyway, listen, we'll come back to Luton, you know, at another time, because that, you know, that game is in the future. We've got a few more games that we need to talk about before we play Luton. We're going to go away. We're going to come back and we are going to talk about that Brighton match. Wednesday night under the lights, Brentford played Brighton, and they played Brighton a few days after that absolutely pulsating game against Manchester United, where Brentford should have got all 3 points, but they didn't quite get all 3 points. And in the end, we were very happy that they got 1 point after going one goal down in 90th plus four, and then getting the goal back in 90 plus eight or 90 plus nine, was it? So we got a draw against Manchester United. We had to come again and go against Brighton on Wednesday night. It has to be said, the match was not the same at all. It was a very different type of game. And it started off with a bit of strangeness, because it started off with... the word on the street saying that Brian Mbeumo was going to be playing instead of Ivan Toney. And that wasn't even a word on the street. An official tweet had gone out on the official Brentford, you know, platform, saying that, you know, Ivan Toney has been dropped at the last minute. I think it was due to an injury, and Mbeumo is going to start ahead of him. And then all of a sudden the match started and Ivan Toney started. So there's a bit of strangeness there, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, I mean, it went round the... He went around the ground like wildfire, really. I mean, you know, it wasn't just in the West End. Someone come up to me, goes, "Oh, do you hear? You know, Tony's been, you know, swapped for Mbeumo, and I just went, really? I mean, I just thought, oh God, you know, here we go. This is all we need. Just when you think, you know, your talisman's gonna, you know, get back on song, and the team's come out, and I'm looking around me going, that looks like Ivan Toney to me. And then it was only until really, and you know, until we. They actually, you know, kicked off. I thought, no, it's definitely Ivan Toney. So yeah, I'm not quite sure what happened there. And obviously, the original tweet has been deleted. So yeah, that did cause a lot of confusion. I think we were all slightly surprised to see that Thomas had named a completely unchanged team from the Manchester United game. You could, you know, obviously you could understand why, because there was no one in the team on Saturday that deserved to be, you know, in brackets, dropped. But you know, with Mbeumo back, and they're saying that he was, you know, fit to start if need be, then you expect him to come in to kind of, like, you know, just make our starting lineup stronger, and in the end he got, you know, his 20 minutes at the end. Whether that was something that Thomas would regret or do the same again, because, you know, the energy levels did seem down, and I go back to what I say, you know, very different opposition, maybe a different game plan, maybe judging the strengths and weaknesses between Brighton and Manchester United very differently. Man United did give us a lot more space to play through, around, and back to front and sideways. We were able to kind of impose our game way more than we were against Brighton. In fact, Brighton were the ones that seemed to be in control of that for large chunks. We did have quite a lot of opportunities. We seemed to get behind them in the first half, didn't really do that in the second. And, you know, the pessimist in me, or the, you know, for the Brentford fan that's watched Brentford almost every game this season, you kind of expected them to actually go ahead. You know, I'd seen those kind of us sitting deep, us soaking up a lot of pressure. And it's okay when, you know, you're doing that against teams that necessarily, you know, you absorb pressure in periods through every game. But when you do that against sort of like the lesser teams, you can see us riding the wave. But there seems to be a bit of an inevitability about conceding sometimes, and I saw that last night. But to their credit, we you know, defended really resolutely again, and we restricted them to pop shots from range, really. I don't think Flecken was really, really troubled. He wasn't forced into, you know, making the kind of saves that he did against United. So I guess mission accomplished. Do you agree with that, Bill?
Yeah, I mean, I do agree. I mean, like I said to you, I managed to I watched the game, but obviously I'm here in Florida, and me and my brother spent, you know, we're in Tallahassee, right, which is, you know, it's the capital of Florida, but let's just say it's not the most liveliest of places. It's got, you know, it's got loads of bars, it's got lots of characters, it's got lots of activity, but it hasn't got that much activity, to be quite honest with you. And we spent about the whole of the afternoon before driving around to different bars trying to find somewhere that was going to show the game. And we were like, you know, we could sit and watch it on our laptops, but really, you know, we really want to sit down and sit in a bar and watch a game. So we drove around to about 15 different bars. It's like, no, we're not showing the game on Peacock. No, we're not showing the game on Peacock. And eventually we found this one bar, so I watched the game in this bar, and to be quite honest, I thought this is actually perfect, because we went there, and the day beforehand they were very accommodating. They basically said, we're going to give you your own TV, you can come down there, you can watch the game, and you can have a right laugh. And I thought, yeah, okay, it's cool. So I thought, we turned up at the bar, and my brother said to me, like, there's going to be no one else in this bar, you can sit down there, you can watch the game on your TV, you can do whatever you want to, and then that's fine. So, and I turned up in this bar at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and it was absolutely packed, full of characters, what I say. And let's just put it this way, myself and my brother, we were the only two people without the presidential campaign caps on, endorsement caps, you know what I'm saying? We didn't have our tramp caps on, but everybody else did in the house, like, you know. And we sat down to watch the football. Well, but to be fair, the people were very friendly, very accommodating. They sat down there, they said, we have got no idea about football, but as long as you are happy, we're happy. and we sat down there at some good IPAs, and to be quite honest, I had a real good laugh. But we sat down and watched the game, and I said at the time, I said, boy, this is a very different, and I sat down with this Man United fan as well, who'd moved from England to Tallahassee as well about 20 odd years ago. He was actually going to pick up his kids from school, but as soon as I popped in, all of a sudden that went out the window, like, you know what I'm saying? So I don't know if social services have been called or what, but, like, you know, he's sitting down there drinking whiskey with me at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, like, you know, watching the Brentford game. And he sat down and he's going, you know, this Brighton team are very organised. You know, the Brentford team are, you know, it took them a while to get back into the game. But for us, it was a very, very different challenge, because Brighton, yes, they had a lot of the ball, but also they weren't doing the things that Man United were doing. They weren't allowing us to have the ball, you know, and dictate the play. And it was much, much more difficult. And what I thought in the end of the day is I just thought that Brentford, because a lot of people saying they're very unhappy that they didn't try, we definitely didn't want to lose that game. So we played a really, really, really safe game, I thought. We sat back. We just did not make any mistakes. So even though Brighton had a lot of that game, and they, you know, they have some very good players, there wasn't any point in that game where I felt that Brighton were dominating to an extent that I thought that we were going to lose. I just kind of thought this looks like it's a bit of a draw, a nil all game all the way through, and I was happy with that, because for me, like I said to you, I just want to see us chiseling points away. I don't want to see us losing games. And that game, we probably would have lost. Probably, you know, a couple of seasons ago, at the first season in the Premier League, we probably lost that game. But today, we kind of just said, look, tell you what, let's just go out and get the point if we can do. And then we'll be happy with that. And then we'll just see what we could do on Saturday. I don't know if that was the feeling around the stadium, because from the feeling that I got, there was a bit of gloom that people weren't happy that we weren't going for it on Saturday. But I was happy that we didn't go for it. And I was just happy for us to try and nick something if we could do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it kind of did have nil-nil written all over it, if I guess we're being honest in hindsight. But as I said, you know, it was just me. I just thought it would be our luck that we would concede one, and, you know, it would be difficult to kind of flip it and go from being safe to be going gung-ho. And the big shout was clearly, you know, the VAR incident just before the break. You know, Wiesa was, you know, you hear Wiesa was, you know, being questioned about a foul on Lewis Dunk in the area. And once again, it was similar to the situation at Burnley. You play on and you go through almost like another phase of play, and you've forgotten about the tangle. And then all of a sudden the game stopped, and you see a big VAR thing go up, and you're thinking, well, what the hell is all this about? And you thought, oh, here we go again, you know. We're gonna get a really, really dubious VAR penalty against us, and you know, it's gonna be a game changer. But to the referee's credit, and to the amazement, I think, of every single person in the ground, that the referee went over to his monitor, he watched it, and it was obviously a, you know, a nervous pause. And he turns round, and like they always do, they hesitate before they walk back onto the pitch and gather their thoughts. And instead of him doing the, you know, the square shape with his fingers and then pointing to the penalty spot, he just walks over and spoke to both players, or he spoke to Dunk, and he gave a free kick the other way. So, you know, we were amazed. And I think maybe at that point you're thinking, right, okay, the luck's with us. We're gonna get a win, but, you know, maybe the luck was with us and we just didn't concede and we get the point. But yeah, I think it was a real heart in mouth moment, and we were just baffled, you know, baffled and then relieved that the referee clearly made the right decision. How was that on, you know, what were the commentators saying, Bill?
Again, you know, I mean, no one knew, to be honest, no one knew, I mean, probably like you, no one knew why the penalty was, or the potential penalty was given. The ball was in play, and all of a sudden they just stopped and they said, oh, there's a VAR decision. And we were all really confused. You have to admit, obviously, like I said to you, this is sort of the middle of the afternoon, and a few beers have been consumed, and there's all sorts of character activity going on in the place. So the confusion was probably kind of was exasperated by all that kind of activity, but we really had no idea what was going on. As soon as he walked over to the screen, I just said, it's, you know, everyone just said, that's it, it's going to be a penalty, isn't it? And we were, again, very confused when he turned around and he didn't. But he came and he walked over. And I don't know whether or not he kind of like, he basically said to Dunk, you cheated. I don't know, because obviously given the free kick the other way, I don't know if he kind of gave it to him for faking, which I wasn't 100% sure, but we looked at it before. Is he trying to fake a foul here to try and sort of go down? Has he given it for that? Or has he given the foul from Dunk, you know, the other way? Everything was still confused. And obviously, I haven't seen it back since, because the channel that we watch it on, the Peacock channel, like I said to you, it's not as extensive as Sky. So Sky, literally, you get the talks afterwards, you get the pre-match, the halftime talk. You don't get any of that on Peacock. You get the match, you get a couple of replays, the commentator's talking about it, then it moves on. So you have to make your own assumptions. But it was very confusing. It was quite obviously, it was a massive relief. But yeah, you know, the penalty didn't go against us, and that was a big turning point in the game, I think. And you know, there was other things that happened. You know, obviously, Mbeumo came on rightfully as he said, you know, at the back end of the game. You know, he was all right, but I just really did feel that we just did not want to concede, and I just thought defensively we were pretty good. You know, I thought we were all right defensively. We kept them out. You know, they had, you know, they controlled the ball. I haven't seen this, that, something. I'm sure that, you know, the Gowler and the Beast breakdown posse will giving a much more accurate breakdown of this game in a little bit later on this show. But for me, I was just very happy that we managed to repeal them and we got the point and we can move on. Because for me, and I keep saying it, it's all about the Sheffield United game. That Sheffield United game, yeah, they might be gone, but that's not the point. It's about us getting 3 points against them. We get 3 points against them, you get the comfortable, and then it's kind of whoever else we get the next 3 points again between now and the end of the season.
Yeah, and I think it's probably best that we just do frame it like that, because, you know, we could speak for, you know, for a long time about the, you know, the inadequacies of our team going forward, being able to break past the halfway line, keep giving the ball away, just hoofing it. There was no outlet. And when we actually did finally have an outlet, when Brian came on, there was three players on him. You know, it was kind of like they knew that if they could keep him quiet, they could police the rest of the game, because we weren't able to kind of retain any kind of possession for any period of time, really, especially in that second period. And it was really frustrating to watch, you know, the way we kind of threaded the ball. We played like one touch, you know, give and goes round statuesque Man United players. The Brighton lot were really aggressively pressing, and they, you know, they were clearly better organised, better motivated, had a clear expectation of what was kind of expected of them. And, you know, it was funny listening to the Brighton fans singing boring, boring Brentford. They seem to have got full of themselves the last couple of years, you know, the way they're playing. And, you know, you kind of understand that, fair play to them as well, but they've taken that kind of righteous kind of, we play football the right way, and if you don't play football exactly like us, you're boring. Same with Wolves, you know, when we went to their place, you know, boring, boring Brentford, because they think they're playing football the right way. So, you know, we escaped. We have got that point. And it's going to be really fascinating to see, you know, how we approach the game at Villa, because, you know, it's the Brighton threats and the Aston Villa threats are not dissimilar. You know, they're two teams that really like to play on the front foot. They're both having really good seasons. Get the ball wide, you know, there's width there, and there's threats from deeper as well. So, you know, Thomas Frank has got his work cut out again to kind of keep us tight, get the energy stores replenished, and, you know, make the decision about whether, you know, this is the game that Brian starts, or whether we kind of just keep it tight and bring him on for 20 minutes. And it's all about the Sheffield United game, because the Sheffield United game on Saturday week, we play Sheffield United at home, and that's the game that Luton go to Manchester City. So, you know, there's a potential 6-point swing there. And, you know, as good, you know, as kind of reticent as I am to keep harking back to, you know, Luton Town in that final relegation spot, you know, that's really, you know, we've said it a million times, that's kind of really what our season's all about for the remainder. Yeah, we want to beat Fulham. Yeah, we want to go to Everton and absorb that pressure. You know, yeah, we want to go to Luton and do the same thing. And, you know, we really, you know, in an ideal world, you want to reel in Crystal Palace in 14th place. You know, they're a couple of points ahead of us. And there's a big gap then. There's another 9-point gap to Fulham. That's unrealistic. 14th is as high as we're probably going to get unless we win every single game. So, you know, it's about just keeping it real, as they say. And, you know, just keeping that kind of gap between us and the proper danger zone is really the sort of important thing.
Right, okay. So listen, I mean, we've been talking about the game. Let's go over to the fans straight after the game. Let's hear what they had to say about that Brighton match.
We must have gone out there saying to our players that, you know, Brighton are very good on the counter. They'll press you, and also if you press them heavily, they'll go over the top and bypass the midfield. So I think really it was trying not to give Brighton possession in dangerous areas. We sort of succeeded with that, albeit that Brighton had the ball quite a lot on the sort of approaching our final third. But then it seemed that we were quite well set up defensively, because I can't count the number of shots, you know, pop shots Brighton took. It really, you know, I don't know if they created a whole lot. Everything was like half chances and stuff like that. And although we didn't see much of the ball, we created a few bits here and there. Probably just the game plan tonight, but kind of frustrating after what we saw on Saturday.
I think we all turned up hoping for a little bit more, but Brighton look a much better team than United. They're an aggressive team. They close you down. They play quick 1-2s. They move well. And I think we got caught a little bit square. That said, if you look at the chances created in the first half, they fell to us and not to them. We are, but we've got a point, and it's another 2 points in total gains over two games. We're edging towards staying up, which ultimately is what we need to do now. We will put out a draw. One just word of credit, actually. Chris Ayer, who's just walking past clapping his hands, he was excellent again at the back today. He's strung about two or three great games together now. So fair play to the defence. We held out. Brighton didn't actually create a lot, but we were hoping for a little bit more.
What I must say is, defensively, some of the tackles that Brentford players put in, just throwing their bodies on the line. And anyone in here who doubts that they've won it, you know, you need to look at some of those, you know, on a replay tonight, because they were defensively. I think we look a lot more solid. That's two games unbeaten now. Didn't really trouble their keeper much, which was disappointing. But you know, it's something to build on. You know, if we play like we've played in these last two games over the next few weeks, I mean, Aston Villa is going to be tough. But you know, let's face it, we get a point at Aston Villa, that's fantastic. If we don't, then we just focus on Sheffield United.
There you go, fans, after the Brighton game. And look, you know, let's just move on. Just quickly, give a quick match summary, actually, because interesting. I mean, we're talking about how good or not so good the Bees were. I mean, 60%, 67% possession right now to 33% as well. Their XG was 1.14 to ours 0.57. So, yeah, they created quite a lot of, you know, high opportunity chances. But the fact is that they had 24 shots, okay? Only had one big chance, though, but they had 24 shots to our 5. They had one big chance, we didn't have any. So it's almost like they created quite a lot to get that XG, but there's a lot of bluster and there's a lot of, you know, just a lot going on that didn't sort of kind of create very much. I mean, they had 605 passes to our 251, a 91% pass accuracy. Because so you can see, you know, they were good at keeping the ball, you know, compared to us. Interesting, the man of the match. And this was sort of the man of the match by whoscored.com. Because the besotted global man of the patch actually hasn't been decided as yet, because we're still voting on that, because this podcast is happening thick and fast after the game. But Mark Flecken actually was the top performer, according to whoscored.com, with a score of 8, which is good for Flecken, because like I said to you, he's coming under a lot of flacken as of late this season. So good for him to have got that. Then after that, it was Julio, Joao Pedro, Pascal Gross, Joel Wittben as well, all for Brighton, who are the top performers. So, you know, it kind of goes to show you how the game was going. But also, you've got to argue to say that's kind of how we were playing our game, you know, because interestingly, on the tackles front, the highest tackler was Joel Wittben as well. He got 5 tackles. But after that, all the top tackles were Janelt, Collins, Damsgaard and Yarmolik, all beast players as well. So it kind of just goes to show you what we were doing to try and make sure that we did not let them into that game. Just talking about the game itself as well, Laney. I mean, we've talked about the chances. We've talked about how we've kind of held back. Oh yeah, the summary. Okay, I mean, let's just talk about Brighton first. I mean, they created goal scoring opportunities from through balls and also from long shots, but they were poor at finishing. Brentford, quite interestingly, almost like the reverse for the Man United game. Brentford had no significant strengths and we were poor at finishing and we were caught offside often. So that's probably a bit of a fair reflection of the game. Do you think, Laney?
Yeah. I, if we're being totally honest, you'd say we had no significant strengths. I think that's pretty, you know.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
In 3 words, that's pretty well kind of like succinct, isn't it? So, yeah, you know, I expect us to have more significant strengths when we go to Birmingham at the weekend.
That's right. So, listen, we're going to go to JB because JB's got enough significant strengths. And he's going to tell us about his strengths with the fat and the funk that he's got on this show.
Are you ready for this? I told you it was coming.
Who?
JB. And he's ready to stock it to you one time. Get it.
Hello, Jonathan Birchall here again. So it was 2 games in 4 days against 2 teams with eyes on European places, which were both 0-0 in the 93rd minute. Although very different up to that point. Against Brighton, we had our first Premier League 0-0 of the season, and the first at home since Chelsea 18 months ago. It was our 5th clean sheet of the season. We had had 9 at this stage last season, with 5 being the same as Raya in season 1, where Fernandes had also kept one. In the last 45 days, Ivan has now gone 7 league games without a goal, his longest run for us, although he has scored for England in this time. Saturday's point against Manchester United was only the 2nd one we've taken off a current top 6 side this season, Spurs on day 1 being the other. In the Man United away game, they equalised in the 3rd added minute and scored their winner in the 7th. It had been the only time this season that our opponents had scored in added time. They then carried on with that with their goal in the 6th added minute on Saturday, but our equaliser in the 9th added minute was the latest goal we scored in the 9 seasons that added time has been used for recorded goal times. Ticket allocation has been a topic of discussion this week. Throughout our history, this has always been a tricky issue. For a major FA Cup tie with Chelsea in 1950, which eventually see 36,000 at Griffin Park, the club decided to allow in-person purchases to buy 4 tickets each. However, it was quickly discovered that entrepreneurial youngsters were buying 4 and then selling them for a higher amount further down the queue. The club then reduced the allocation to 2 each and banned children from buying tickets.
So there you go, JB, facts and funk. And like I said to you, that Brighton game, I think it's teeing us up nicely for the Villa game at the weekend. We've got the Gowler at the Bees Breakdown, who is giving us a bit of a breakdown on not only the Brighton game, but he's also looking forward to the Villa game at the weekend. Let's have a listen to what Bees Breakdown have got to say about those 2 matches.
Hey, this is Jacob Galler with Bees Breakdown. So for that Brighton review, Brentford ended with 0.57 XG to Brighton's 1.14 XG. Brighton held 67% possession, but nothing really to show for it, right? They ended with 24 shots, but 11 of those were just ambitious, out-of-the-box, long-range efforts, and Brighton ended with their longest average shot distance of the season. And Brentford did create some chances of their own from their high press and man marking, but the Bees were just missing that final pass or clinical finish. And normally De Zerbi wants to put out of the back with those short passes, but I thought Brentford's high press routinely forced them to launch it long to bypass the press. And then Brentford did create some opportunities from winning back possession after disrupting Brighton's buildup, but I thought that the Bees also showed a glimmer of possession-based football of their own. There was one instance that ended with a good chance for Wiese that he just couldn't put on target. All right, so for that Villa preview, they're currently fourth. Thanks to some clinical finishing and above-average keeper play, they've scored about 6 more goals than expected and saved 3 more goals than expected. However, while they are allowing the fourth lowest total amount of shots, when opponents do get those opportunities, those shots are generally on target and close-range efforts. Their opponent's shot on target percentage is 37.7%, and they're allowing the shortest average shot distance. And some of this is due to Villa's high line, which we've seen in the past. This season, they've caught opponents offside 138 times, and for reference, Tottenham is second at 99. I do think that one area the Bees can gain an advantage is winning second balls or 50-50 balls. Aston Villa have the second lowest amount of ball recoveries and the most amount of times being dispossessed. So Brentford would love to have Norgaard back for this, but I thought that Janelt's done a good job filling in, and he's even led the squad in tackles and interceptions while Norgaard's been out.
So there you go, Bees Breakdown, statistical and tactical lowdown on the Brighton match, and also looking forward to the Villa match. And I'm very much looking forward to standing underneath the big screen on Saturday up in Nashville with the Gowler, who's going to be flying into Nashville to watch Brentford play Aston Villa on the big screen in the Premier League Fan Fest. And I know nothing about Nashville whatsoever other than country music, and it's got some very good writers. If you're music industry, you want good writers, you actually know, you go to Nashville, you go to the publishers down there, and they will get you good writers for your artists. So, but other than that, I knew nothing about Nashville, but there's been enough people that I've been chatting to the last couple of days saying that Nashville's very good. I was even talking to Adil Ray as well, who's on GMTV, but also is Citizen Khan. He's an Aston Villa fan, and he said to me, Nashville, absolutely teeping tremendous. You should check it out. So it may be a little bit of a surprise. I might have a little bit of a laugh. And, the likes of the Gary Blissetts, he's on his way down there. I think I saw he landed today as well. The Buckle, going to see him. Paul Buckle's out there as well. And Marcus Gale, looking forward to seeing them all out there as well. So should be a bit of a Brentford fest in Nashville this weekend. But we'll talk about that in a little bit as we talk about the Villa match. We're going to go away. We're going to have a little break. I'm going to get myself a little bit of get myself an iced tea. And then I'll come back and let's talk about the Villa match. Aston Villa going up there on Saturday. Normally quite a good little away day for us. I mean, things have changed a little bit because the pub that we normally go to, unfortunately, the Barton Arms, has closed down just out of the blue. And that's a bit of a gutter because that used to be a little bit of a sort of meeting of minds. Brentford fans and Villa fans used to meet there. We used to have a good old chinwag before the match and after the match, and then we'd go off to the game, but it's not there anymore. So like, Bees fans are a little bit kind of at odds ends as to what to do before this match now, which is a bit of a shame because it seems like there's a bit of a tradition that has been completely and utterly just got rid of. But Aston Villa, it's really funny because Villa obviously doing very well, trying to go for Europe, but also a bit of a funny side because they've got a season where they're doing quite well, but I don't know whether or not their European exploits has also made them a little bit of a kind of, you don't know what you're going to get with Villa. I mean, what do you reckon, Lady?
Yeah, recently, I mean, they've got a few injuries as well. I think Ollie Watkins is out for the weekend. He was out last night for the defeat at Man City, but they he's got them playing well. From the reports I read and from the bits and bobs I've picked up on, they're getting a bit of kudos for at least trying, giving it a go up at the Etihad. But there you go. That's what happens. You play an expansive open game and Man City do your four. And you're right to highlight the European run, because it's still going. You know, they've got two games in the next fortnight. They're playing Lille. They're away next Thursday. So, you know, at home next Thursday, and then they're away the following week. So that's they've got a lot to be kind of thinking about, and there's a distraction. You know, there is a distraction. Obviously, you know, after them losing last night, they'll want to bounce back, and they'll be expecting to beat us. And I'm kind of expecting them to beat us as well. But the European games is probably, you know, it's probably like their biggest real chance of success this season, and they'll be taking that massively seriously. So it's an exciting finale, to be honest with you. You know, a lot of people do give the Europa Conference League a lot of flack, but it shows that you can chop away in there, and if you've got the strength in depth, then you can get some silverware. So, you know, Aston Villa are a team that I enjoy watching. It's a ground that I enjoy going to. We don't always have the best of luck there, but you know, we need to obviously go there and do a lot better than we did last season, where we were literally blown away in the first 15 minutes, weren't we?
That's right. And that's the thing. I mean, and also we weren't expecting it last season as well, because it did come completely out of the blue. And also what I'd say is, I think it's one of those things where Aston Villa last season, it was a bit of a perfect storm for them. All of a sudden, I think that they were just very good, and they came to us, and you know, it was almost like the start of their, we're actually going to be quite good this season. And after that game, I mean, they beat us. Was it 5-1, 5-0? It was a lot of goals in it anyway. And then the Aston Villa fans came to us and they said at the end, "Oh, we're going to get to Europe this season." And I thought, well, listen, mate, like, you've just beaten Brentford, you know, by 5 goals, but that doesn't mean that you're going to be a European team, because you have to be consistently good. But to be fair, that was almost like the beginning of the rise of Aston Villa as being the new team that we know now. Now, whether or not they can keep it up, you know, that is a very, very big question. But for me, we're gonna go there, and it's gonna be tricky. We know they've got good players. We know they've got good attacking players. In a way, it's quite good that Ollie Watkins isn't playing, because after what happened at New Griffin Park early on in the season with the furore that went on there, he doesn't have to go and start explaining that and start bringing that all up, and that could or couldn't affect things. It might also get their players all wound up, because they're thinking, right, he's back again, we've got to protect our Ollie, all that kind of stuff. The fact that he's all kind of out of the picture, I think, kind of it's quite handy for us, actually, as well. So we just kind of need to concentrate on making sure their other players, who are also quite good, don't actually kind of get anywhere near the goal. So It is a worrying game. It's a tricky game. Again, it's not one of these games where I think that we would have or expect to get 3 points at all. If we can nick a point up at Aston Villa again, I'll be completely delighted, because again, it's chiseling away and just getting these points to just pull us away from that zone down the bottom there, so that everyone can relax. So for me, that's what I'll be looking for, and I'd be expecting and hoping that Brentford are going to be playing their slightly safe game again, sitting deep, you know, obviously trying to hit them on the break. Whether or not Brian gets a start or not again in this game, I don't know. Personally, again, I would leave him for Sheffield United, because that's a game that I just think we know that we're going to win, and I'd rather him be going all guns blazing against them than kind of risk any injury or anything like that against Aston Villa. I mean, your thoughts, Laney?
Yeah, well, you're right. You know, it's Thomas Frank's going to be more than aware of the strength of Aston Villa, and the statos and the analysis people will work out the best sort of way. You know, but we've gone away to Man City and we've kept it really tight and we've frustrated them, and you know, okay, we certainly weren't our most expansive, but we have to be confident that we are going to create. We do create something in every game. You can say last night was probably the one we created the least, you know, as the XG will show, but I back us normally 99 times out of 100 to create a couple of big chances in every single game we play, whoever we play against. So if we can just keep it tight in the back, and you know, do that low block. You know, we will be five at the back again, I have no doubt. We'll go there to frustrate when we have to, and we have got the ammo to hit them hard. You know, we have got some pace in behind. If we can get that ball, we are really reliant on Matty Jensen to pick out those killer passes, and you know, Wiese to use his, you know, his strength. You know, Wiese is on good form. He didn't score last night, obviously, but he looks lively, and he looks the one that's able to kind of break the lines and probably get in behind. Ivan Toney will be man marked very, very closely, and he's going to be very physical, I think. You know, Aston Villa aren't afraid to go in hard, and I think it's going to be quite a niggly game up at Villa Park.
Okay, so we've been talking about Villa, but we need to go up to Villa. We're going to talk to Kev, the Villa fan, also goes to England, see him at England games as well. We're going to have a little chin wake and talk about Aston Villa. So, yeah, big game. Saturday, we're off to Villa again, the mighty, mighty Bees. Villa have been on a European tour, and their fans are very happy, you know, with what's gone down this season. I think, I'm making a lot of presumptions here, actually, but I thought, to find out if they really are happy, you've got to go to somebody who knows everything about Villa. We've got Kev, the Villa fan, and also the England fan. I see him at all the England games that I go to as well. Kev, how are you?
Hi, mate. Yeah, really good, thank you. Great to join you. And yes. We're very happy. Very happy.
That's right. So listen, we've got the Aston Villa coming up on Saturday. I mean, I'm just going to give you a little thought for you to just throw your minds back to this season. I mean, like, you know, just talk about this season quickly. Are you happy? Are you not happy? Just give us your marks out of 10.
We're really happy, mate. Honestly, it's probably a 9 out of 10, if not even a 10. And it could become the 10. You know, as you said, we're in Europe. We're enjoying that. We've got Lille next week coming up in the quarterfinal of the Conference League. Sitting fourth in the league, way above the vast majority of expectations at the start of the season. So really, really pleased with how it's gone. Unai is doing an absolutely superb job since he came in.
Yeah, so I mean, your manager, obviously, he's just taken you up a couple of notches. Is it all down to him, or is it the recruitment? You know, because, you know, there's that one stage where, to be honest with you, you came in at me, you know, we were both together in the Championship. You know, we did all right at the Championship, and then you kind of got that little bit of a run on. You disappeared off into the Premier League, but you could have come straight back down, and it was only for Hawkeye failing that you actually didn't come back down, and you could have been languishing in the bottom leagues again, but no, you're still here, and then you seem to upped it. So it is the manager, is it the recruitment, is it various things?
Yeah, probably various things, but I think the vast majority has to be down to the manager. He's done a great job. I mean, he took, if you look at where we were when we got rid of Gerrard last season, Unai came in, we beat Man United in his first game, which we just don't tend to do. And just from there, went on a brilliant run, qualified for Europe, you know, going from about 16th when he came in up to finish up to qualify for Europe with the squad that Gerrard had. And then some really sound recruitment over the summer. Paus Torres, for instance, hopefully you'll get to see him Saturday. He was rested last night. He, for instance, at the back has been absolutely superb. And you know all about Oliver as well. Of course, who's probably under the coaching of Unai, just having his best season for us since he joins us.
Yeah, so and then you talk about this season, obviously you're happy, you've talked about a couple of players you brought in, you've talked about a couple of games that you played as well, but also the European Tour. Just talk to us about the European Tour. I mean, Villa haven't played in Europe for quite a while, it's got to be said. What is it like, you know, going on the European Tour? What are the games like? What are the away days like?
Well, to be honest, my first away game is going to be in Lille in 2 weeks' time, weeks tonight. So I haven't been on the away trips myself, done my home games. It's great. I mean, for me, I'm certainly of that sort of age group. I was 16 when we last won a trophy back in '96. I'd take anything. You know, we've got a real chance of winning the Conference League, and I think most of us, we're not bothered whether it's not the Champions League, it's not the top ranked European competition that we're in, but we're really pleased to be there. Had some good nights at home. The Bournemouth, the Warsaw game, and the fans didn't get in. because they were fighting outside and over the tickets with the police.
Just quickly, talk about that. How bad was that? Because we saw it on video, and you know, it kind of seems to be, because the thing that I say is that, you know, first of all, I was glad that Brentford didn't get into Europe last season. I said that at the time because I think it was too early for us, and I think it goes to show you, if we had got into Europe this season, we'd have been in real trouble with our injury problems, and we'd have been really, really stretched. But you've got into Europe. But the other thing that kind of worries me a little bit is some of these European fans, they take things a little bit too seriously, especially when they're playing English teams, and they come over in their droves, and they're on some sort of kind of war march, like, you know what I'm saying? I heard some Villa fans saying that it's kind of the worst that they've ever seen. Is that true?
Yeah, I think if I come off at Aston Station and walk up to the Holton and sit in there, so all the aggro is right at the other end. So we weren't really aware. There's a lot of police presence around as we came off the train, walked up, a lot more than normal. Once we got in and there were no away fans in, at first I thought it was maybe one of those things, you know, where they all stay on the concourse and then all come zooming up just in time for kickoff or something like that. And of course then the rumours start, no, there's a load of aggro down there. The police did a great job that evening, really, in containing that. So we didn't see much, but the lads who sit behind me, who'd had to walk up from Perry Barway, said, yeah, similar as what you just said there, like, not seeing anything like that for, I don't know, probably since we played Birmingham.
Okay, so you're equating your Eastern European challenges against Birmingham City, which is quite an interesting comparison. Like I said to you, we talked about Udo as your manager as well, and the difference as well. I mean, like this season, you know, just talk to us about, like I said, players, you know, players of your squad. Are you comfortable? Are you happy with your squad? Players that you've brought in, and who's also making you really excited? I mean, you know, you talked about a few players earlier, but who's really exciting you, just one or two players?
Yeah, so I'd say one of the things actually about Europe as well is we did seem to cope in those throughout the group stage quite well with that Thursday and Sunday situation. I mean, you look at Brighton, who finished above us last year, brilliant, but they seem to quite to struggle with it a little bit. So you know, we've done one there. Diaby had started the season really well. Paid a lot of money, 50 million-ish for him in the summer, so you sort of expect it. He started really well, went off the boil, but has suddenly come back into it. But before last night, I think he'd been involved in four goals in four games. So he looks back on the boil. We've just signed Morgan Rogers from Middlesbrough in January. A lot more to come from him, but he's suddenly starting to show, show a bit of potential. And then we've got what the press here are labelling the agents of chaos in Zaniola and Duran. So Watkins missed out last night with a hamstring. They're saying he might be fit for Saturday, but I'm not so sure. So we may have Duran. He's only 20. He's Colombia. Well, he's Colombian. He came from MLS. And Zaniola's one to watch. You don't quite know what you're going to get from him. A sort of man of the match performance. Could be a walking red card, a bit of a hot head. Up front, some exciting options.
That's right. And talking about hot heads, let's cast our mind back to the game at New Griffin Park at the beginning of the season, or earlier in the season. It's actually in December, just before Christmas, the last game before Christmas. Interesting one there. Aston Villa went 2-1 winners. There are red cards on both sides of that game. It got very fiery. It was one of those games where all of a sudden there seems to be a little bit of beef between Brentford and Aston Villa. Ollie Watkins, who is well and truly loved by Brentford fans, he went off on one because he mentioned the fact that one fan had abused him behind the goal, and so he kind of went off on him, and when he scored his goal, he kind of started celebrating, and that just caused all sorts of mayhem. The Villa players came piling in and they were celebrating and goading the Brentford fans, and it just caused all sorts of problems. I mean, what is your feelings on that game?
Yeah, I think it's very unusual for what, and you guys know this, but really unusual for Watkins to suddenly, you know, lose his temper, as it were, like that. And he explained it away, didn't he, at the end? And I think, remember that Thomas Franks had tried to calm it as well, didn't he, his post-match, and said, because one guy and that. I think Martinez, from our point of view, had gotten involved as well and come running from his goal. And I don't know if you want me to swear or not, but I mean, the sort of king of shithousery, I think, is how we describe him. I think he got involved as well. But, I mean, between the two sets of clubs, I think it's quite unusual. I mean, I know we've taken managers and players and goodness, that's why the last few years probably. I don't think there's any lingering tension in the air from our point of view.
It'll be interesting to see what happens in this game, because also you've got Esri Konsa, who also used to play for Brentford, and it's a bit of a weird one, Konsa, because, you know, we signed him for 2.5 million from Charlton. We literally sold him 12 months later for 12 million to you. You enacted his clause. He couldn't wait to leave Brentford. It's almost, most people can't even remember him, to be quite honest with you. He hardly played, and he kind of just had that feeling that he kind of didn't really want to be here when he was here. So what was interesting, it seemed that he couldn't wait to get his oar stuck in, and when the abuse came, he couldn't wait to kind of dish it in as well. So I think, you know, the feeling was that when we go back to your place, it's going to be felt from the terraces and possibly from on the field as well, that Aston Villa are going to be giving it back as much as they did down at your place. Is that the feeling around you?
Yeah, it's not necessarily something we've particularly chatted about, like me and my mates up here. We'll see.
You never know. Probably
be playing right back again, like as we saw him for England with Matty Cash out injured. So yeah, you can expect him at right back.
Okay, so game on. Let's talk about it. Game on Saturday. I mean, what are you expecting from Brentford? We don't want to bang on about it, but we've got about 3,472,000 injuries that we've managed to deal with, I think, admirably, in the fact that we haven't got into the relegation zone yet, considering we've had our whole defence out, and then the substitute defenders come in, backup defenders come in, and they get injured as well. You know, we've got a new goalkeeper, Flecken, who was terrible to start off with, then had a good patch and was terrible again, but he's hot and cold, but he had a good game against Brighton the other day, and he's having some all right games. You know, we've got Brian and Bumo's been out, we've had Norgard who's been out, we've had, you know, Clean Lewis Potter, you know, literally we've had, you know, key players out. We've almost had an entire first team out, and a lot of them on long-term injuries. You know, Ethan Pinnock's out, you know, long-term. We've got, you know, Rico Henry, you know him very well. He's out for the whole of the season. We've got Aaron Hickey, right back. He's out for the whole of the season. We've had a nightmare when it comes to injuries, but we're still holding on in there. And that's the reason why you see us kind of conceding all these goals all the time, but we also are unable to score goals. So luckily, Brian and Boomer's back. He's not quite making the start at the moment now. He's coming off the bench, but having him in the side is a big bonus. Ivan Toney's obviously back after his 8-month reclusive session after doing a few little gambling things, you know what I'm saying? So he's back as well, which is all good. But we're a bit of a hodgepodge side at the moment now, so you never know what you're going to get with Brentford. How about with Villa?
I mean, you know, not a sob story, but we've had it as well. I mean, there was a thing going around last night against Man City, an 11 that didn't play, that you could quite easily have picked. You know, Martinez didn't play in goal, Pau Torres, for instance. We've had Tyrone Mings out all season, Wendell out all season. So we've missed a few ourselves. I think that, I quite fancy it on Saturday. And that's nothing against Brentford. That's purely from a Villa point of view. We've got John McGinn coming back. He rested those players, a couple of players last night, dare I say, against Man City, but he did. And we have a habit of bouncing back from bad results. So we obviously got beat 4-1 there.
And talk about that Man City game just quickly.
We had some chances on the break. Like we looked as though we could get something at the on the break, even at 2-1 after half time. I was there. I texted my mate. I hadn't gone. I texted and said, just got to hang in there for the last 10-15 minutes, because we're quite clearly capable of getting something on the break. Unfortunately, we ran into Phil Foden, but from an England point of view, where we normally see each other. Well, you know, what a player. So, you know, they'd rested Haaland, De Bruyne as well. So you were thinking at the start, there's, you know, with a strong team, you could have a chance here. But defensively, we just weren't quite there. And we really let in a poor goal just before half-time, a direct free kick. The wall just fell apart, Zaniola, actually. So that was quite a poor goal to give away. Robert Olsen goal. I think everybody's taking a deep breath when he's playing and not Martinez. Although I think it was just a last-minute sickness bug, so I think he'll be back for Saturday.
Right, okay. So, talking about Saturday, I want you to give us a score prediction.
I'm
going to
go with
2-0.
I'm
going to
go 2-0 Villa.
All right, 2-0 to Villa.
Just to bounce back.
Yeah, okay. And so,
we haven't had... Sorry, just broken up a bit there. I'm going to have to say Watkins will score if he plays.
Of course.
In that little battle up front.
Yeah, well, 2-0 is not as bad as the score that we had last year where we were, of course, at 3-0 down after about 10 minutes or anything like that. So I think we'll be looking at the bonus if that's the case as well. So this is good. Listen, Kev, it's really good to chat to you. I would say that I'll meet you for a beer on Saturday, but like I said, you are going to be in Nashville. Watching the game on the big screen in Nashville at the fan fest, the Premier League fan fest there I'll be at. There, you'll be at the game on Saturday, but no doubt we're going to bump up with each other in Germany to have a few beers for the England.
We're going to
watch Ivan Toney scoring for England, maybe set up by Ollie Watkins. That'll be a nice one, wouldn't it?
That'll be the one.
That's right. Right, nice one, Kev. All right, catch you soon.
Thanks for having me on. Cheers.
So, lady, listen. We've talked about Aston Villa till the cows come home. But at the end of the day, the proof in pudding is going to be when we play them on Saturday. We've talked about the fact that we've got a midweek game. We've talked about the fact that the players may have been slightly tired. We never know. We've talked about the fact that the players may have decided just to not go for it in this game and decide to play for the safety factor. There's a possibility we might do, again, the same up at Aston Villa. Looking at where the strengths and weaknesses are for our opposition, their strengths are shooting from direct free kicks, also from finishing, scoring chances, creating chances using through balls, also creating chances through individual skill, counter-attacks and attacking set pieces. They're strong in all those areas. Where their weaknesses are defending against attacks down the wings, defending against through ball attacks, and also very weak in the air. They attack through the middle of like short passes. They attempt through balls often. They like to hold on to the ball. They play the offside trap. Opponents normally play aggressively against them. They normally have the same first 11 and they are aggressive. Could pose us a few problems there, don't you think, Laney?
Yeah. But they are susceptible as well. They have had a couple of wobbly games at the back. If you can get the tactics right and you can get in behind them, you know, The Tottenham match recently, they lost 4-0 at home. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying we're in the same position as Tottenham at the moment. But it does show that it doesn't go all their way all the time. And you know, they have lost a couple of home games this season in matches where they should have done better probably. So it's not a foregone conclusion, but you know, it's going to be a right toughie, mate.
Yeah, definitely it's going to be a tough one for the Bees. I'm going to ask you, Laney, you going to give us a score prediction, please?
Well, I'm going to stay positive and say we're going to get a 1-1 draw, but I think we're probably going to lose.
So, but you can't have both of them, mate.
Okay, 1-1 draw, mate.
1-1 from the Laney man, and I'm going to go 2-2 to the mighty Bees. You know, which is all good. So, listen, lady, I'll tell you something as well. I'm looking forward to this game on Saturday. Like I said to you, I'm not nervous. It's not one of those nerve-wracking ones as yet. I'm more nervous, actually, about the Fulham game, which is going to come up in a month's time, but we'll talk about that later as well. I'm going to be very, very nervous when we play that team, because if things are going to be coming down to when we play Fulham and for us to actually have to beat them at that stage for some to get something up the ladder, that's not what I want. But Aston Villa, I feel very, very relaxed about it. So like I said to you, I'm looking forward to watching it under the big screen in Nashville with loads of Brentford fans as well, and the Marcus Gale and the Gary Blissett and the Paul Buckles and all sorts of other characters is there, which is going to be good to confirm. I've just noticed, actually, they've just this is something I'm less happy about. They've released some sort of Nashville orientated sort of Premier League shirt, it looks like. Avery Dennison, some sort of kind of, I don't know what this is about, but they've said Brian and Bumo and KLP are in this sort of Nashville orientated shirt, which I'm not overly happy about. And I don't know what that's all about. You haven't seen that, haven't you, lady? Sort of pink and blue number.
No, I haven't seen it, mate.
Hopefully Brentford won't be actually walking out in one of those ones at any time soon. I mean, it's there's a lot of unhappiness with a few of the shirts that have been flying around, but never mind this. I mean, I don't mind a bit of pink and blue being the old Dulwich Hamlet, but this I think this might be pushing the boat out a little bit far with their Nashville number that they're doing here.
I'll have to look that up.
Yes.
Can I be petty?
Yes.
Can I just pull you up on the score? We lost 4-0 at Villa Park. It wasn't 5.
No. I said to you, I couldn't remember. Oh, well, I did ask you. I said to you, Laney, I said, was it 4-5?
It was 4-0.
Well, I think what had happened by the time
it felt a lot more, for sure.
Well, they went 3-0 up within sort of the first 25 minutes, if I remember right.
No, it was less than that.
It was 10 minutes. Right. And that, I think by that stage, and that's why we were just like, oh my God, you know. So that's the score was just. It was irrelevant by that stage, wasn't it? Yeah. So there's a lot of irrelevance, which is all good. So anyway, listen, this is Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for buying us a beer. Besotted.com/beer. Don't forget to also write a review of us and go on all good podcast channels and write a view and also just check us out on there as well. Prideofwest.london. You can check us all out. There'll be a post-match podcast coming to you from Nashville on Saturday, except for I won't be wearing one of them pink shirts. You'll be laughing because you probably have a photograph of me wearing one of them pink Nashville shirts on Saturday after probably having
Make sure you don't buy it.
Yeah, after having some of the IPAs. The Nashville IPAs that I'll be tucking right into, which I'm looking forward to. Good to talk to you. Sort of in long distance styling.
Yeah, have a good trip over there, mate. Enjoy it, and I shall see you back in Blighty next week.
That's right, and we're going to play the best of Villa. Come on, you bees. Let's beat the Aston Villa. Long trip for me down the motorway. I'm in a plane and all over the place, so you better beat those. Villains. Brentford FC, come on you Brentford, come on you bees, come on you Brentford, come on, say it, Brentford. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.